You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is March 11th, 2021, and I am doing a very poor imitation of Sven Longshanks. And if you hadn't noticed, this is not, in fact, Sven Longshanks. I can't do an English accent. I've tried. I can't really describe it to you because it's not a normal language, but what I sound like. But, you know, if I could, I would. Sven is not here for some reason, so I am doing this by myself. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and as always, I am here to discuss international politics, and in particular, military policy. On the 9th of March, that is to say, on Tuesday, RT published an article with the headline, Moscow's troops could dominate NATO in the Baltic region. And this comes from a Polish general with a name that really is unpronounceable. I mean, even for Polish names, it's Skrzypczak, is as far as I'm going with it. But he is a man of great significance. He was the commander of the Polish ground forces. He was for a while a defense advisor for the Polish government, and for some weird reason was the commander of a Canadian unit in Afghanistan. I haven't disentangled how that would work, but the point is he is a man greatly respected in Western military circles. He was being interviewed by Defense 24, which is apparently a Polish language publication dealing with military issues. Now, for a long time, those of you who followed my writings especially, I've been very critical of the American military from an ideological point of view, from a strategic point of view, even from a material point of view. I mean, literally, it is falling apart. And certainly not just my opinion. The U.S. military calls this a crisis. I was the first one to discuss the real numbers of American casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan and how they actually went about covering the casualties up. And the fact that the American military officially calls this a crisis. I'm also the first one to talk about the desertion problem. Since the end of the second Iraq war, which is really one long, disastrous engagement, there's been a huge spike in desertions. The U.S. military, as I've proven over and over again, is a leftist ideological institution, promoting leftist ideological movements abroad. This is why it is the American left that is the war party. Nationalists and traditionalists of all types are the peace party. The only reason that the left got that reputation was because of their opposition to Vietnam. They were opposed to the Vietnam War because they were communists. Fighting communists was a bad thing. Fighting social nationalists and religious nationalists and all the other targets of the American military since the end of the Cold War, that's a good thing. Since that's been the overwhelming target of the U.S. government since the early 90s, now you have the left being completely militaristic. Now you have both sides of this artificial American landscape promoting warfare abroad. Anyway, this Polish general stated that essentially the Russian Sixth Army, with the Russian Baltic Fleet, he stated, and again, he's an expert in this particular area, would need about 3 days to take the Baltics. The issue is, of course, that would cut NATO off. Then Russian soldiers can push through to the Polish coast and then into Central Europe, using the Kaliningrad region as a, or the enclave as a starting off point. Now, the head of that military region, Anton Lyudkhanov, said that this was absurd. Not necessarily that the scenario was absurd, but that, why are you even talking about this? He actually went after this Polish general, saying, well, you're retired, and you have retirement complex trying to be relevant now. I figure the Russians wouldn't necessarily be insulted by this, but they hate the idea that it's going to put something into the American mind that, oh my God, we're weak, we're vulnerable, someone's actually noticed that, we have to do something about it. And of course, he then stated that Russia does not wish to harm its neighbors, which of course is true. Russia has absolutely no interest in expanding its borders. The only thing it wants to do is make sure that NATO doesn't do the same. Since Putin took over in 2000, NATO has done everything in its power to get rid of him, including surrounding him with bases, surrounding him with soldiers, threatening him with war every single day. And again, that's the regional governor I mentioned, Lyudkhanov, not a military man. But he stated that this is stargazing. This is, you know, numbers of tanks and everything else. We need to deal with other things. He did note, too, though, in his refutation, he wasn't denying that the fact is true. He was denying that the fact was relevant. He says, because of the present Polish government, Russia has a pretty good relationship with it. This is the real threat here. Among Germany, Poland, and Hungary, you have a very strong, and maybe even Italy, a very strong anti-NATO, anti-EU movement, because these countries are doing very well with their Russian connection, far more so than anything else. But he's not the only one here. There's an Israeli, actually a political scientist, Yaakov Kedmi, who did an interview with the News Front Pulit Navigator in Russian. It's a Russian site. And he said the Russian military is superior to that, not just of the U.S., but of NATO. And by the way, the U.S. military budget is far over $1 trillion. There's a lot of off-budget. I've dealt with this elsewhere. There's a lot of off-budget things. There's a lot of deliberate accounting errors. Again, I've been through this 100 times. There is no real accounting from the Pentagon. But because of so many things that don't get included in the military budget but still have a military application, the U.S. military budget has been over $1 trillion for a long time. Because there is no accounting, no one has the foggiest clue where that money is being spent. So despite that, this guy, among many others, and again, he's an Israeli, he is opposed to Russian interests in the Middle East and elsewhere, says that the Russian military, not just military as an institution, but the system of which it's a part, is superior to the U.S. He says this, and I'm translating directly from the Russian here, so give me a break. He said, with regards to Russia, I can say that they've succeeded by competently approaching its position and problems. They've created a stable government and financial system. The Russian leadership sought after, after the issues in Ukraine, created by the EU and the US, that the Russian economy has to be stable. The Russian leadership was not going to improve its efficiency at the expense of other things, especially concerning the West, because if that were the case, the economy wouldn't be as stable, and its resilience is increasing. And then he said, because security is more important than the ability to build wealth. Now, this, I believe this is from last year. Yeah, this is from December of last year. I don't remember seeing this at the time. And he is a military expert, despite not being a military man himself. He says, Russia has managed to create a military strategic superiority over the West, which is only increasing today. It ensures the security of the Russian state, but it also is driving, or is pushing the U.S. into an arms race like in the old Cold War. And that weighs heavily on the U.S. economy. Now, what he's saying here is not so much, I mean, the Russian military, we'll talk about this in a minute, is in many areas superior to the Western, to the U.S. Because it's not really Western, we're talking about the United States. Without the U.S., there would be no threats to Russia and Europe. Russia gives far more to Europe than it could ever take. He's saying that, of course, military policy is driven by what the economy can handle, and even what the infrastructure of the area can handle. Few people have pointed out the fact that a mass movement of tanks and armored personnel carriers and equipment trucks really couldn't happen in Europe today. The bridges couldn't handle it. You're talking about tremendously heavy pieces of equipment. Even the rail system, where it even exists, is not prepared to handle the movement of things that heavy. But if you have a strong economy, not necessarily driven by the profit margin, but driven by national security, which has always been the Russian, even to Tsarist times, has always been the Russian concern, then you're going to have a far more stable system and a stable military. He also states, and because I've said this many times, that I'm not quoting directly here, but because the Russian military-industrial complex isn't necessarily privatized, you still have state-owned institutions. Russian weapons, while superior, are also cheaper. In other words, they're less expensive than the American ones. He also noted that they're created faster. The supply lines are superior, especially with strategic weapons. If the U.S. were to catch up with the Russians, he said, the U.S. would have to spend a lot more than it's doing. So the U.S. could spend a ridiculous amount of money on its military and not really get much bang for its buck, to use a stupid slogan. But the point being, when you have the profit margin, when you have incredible corruption, and when you have a massive international empire where you have bases, you know, all over the planet, $1 trillion, 1.2 trillion, whatever the real number is, that's a drop in the bucket. The U.S. military is literally falling apart. I've shown, using military sources, that about 50% of the U.S. Navy, the naval aviation, can't fly, either for a lack of pilots, a lack of spare parts, a lack of mechanics. You know, you need a huge infrastructure to have a plane get off the ground, and it's very expensive. When profit is the main issue, you're going to get equipment with the profit margin and other corruption built in. I repeat myself, there is no accounting of Pentagon spending. The number, let's say, where the real budget is like $1.2 trillion today, when you take everything into consideration, no one knows where that money goes. There's been several attempts. There's actually a law on the books called the Audit the Pentagon Law. Its statement is pretty clear, which has not been put into place. It's been signed. Several auditing companies, the big one from Manhattan, Ernst & Young, I think it was, went down to Virginia and said that they simply can't do it. It is impossible to audit the Pentagon because records are so bad, because it's a deliberate, I mean, they can't even audit a piece of it. The record keeping is so bad that it has to be deliberate. So no one knows where this money goes. That's not the case in the East. And partially it's because you have a single, more or less, centralized state-owned system. Not to mention a far more patriotic population and a population that isn't brainwashed by everything from multiculturalism to having trannies in uniform. You may have heard, well, just a few days ago, the weekend at Bernie's president, Biden, who may or may not be alive or sane or even know where he is, apparently stated, with very slurred speech, by the way, that they're going to start investing in body armor for pregnant women. They're going to start investing in all kinds of equipment, I think maternity flight suits, he said. I said, yeah, maternity flight suits. This is what the U.S., this is where this money goes. And feminist seminars and homosexual rights months, which Air Force bases in, around America have to do. I've seen it. And they have whole websites, and they're not keeping this a secret, which may have something to do with the desertion. There is no sense of mission. There is no sense of tradition anymore. This is what the regime is doing. So on the one hand, they're pushing the U.S. military to do more and more and more. You have fewer men doing far more work with less resources and really no sense of purpose. You ask the average, you know, I come from a military family. You ask the average person coming back what the point was in Afghanistan, you're not going to get a straight answer. Or Iraq. Say something about Saddam Hussein from a million years ago. That's the closest you're going to get. No one has any sense of mission. These tours of duties are getting longer and longer and longer. And the equipment is being pushed to its limit. This is not the case with the Chinese or the Russians or the Belarusians or anybody else. Not to mention the fact that the American supply line is going to be very, very long. They're going to continue to provoke either the Russians or the Chinese. But when you have a system built on something other than profit, it's going to be a, not only the equipment is going to be better, but the sense of esprit de corps and everything else. And it's going to be less expensive. Now, an analytic Russian language, Moscow Street publication online, wrote an article, oh, this is not that long ago. I think it was last year, about the Russian military superiority in pretty much every respect. And it's not entirely disconnected with what the Polish general said. The Russians are getting ready to put into action a nuclear-powered cruise missile with unlimited range. But, you know, altogether, you told me, well, right now, the Russian defense budget is something like $60 billion, which is a drop in the bucket compared to what the U.S., the empire is spending, without much to show for it. NATO's forces, which essentially are the American forces, would be in very bad shape with any kind of clash. The U.S., or NATO, has tried to increase its presence in the Baltics, knowing full well, this is a few years ago, knowing full well that that is a weak link in the alliance. A few years ago, it was something like 4,500 troops in the Baltics, divided into four squads, led by German, Lithuania, the British in Estonia, and Canada and Latvia, and the U.S., of course, is in Poland. But that was based on the Founding Act in 1997. Very, very outdated. NATO, focused really in the Middle East and Central Asia, has moved in a different direction. Russia, on the other hand, is focused more on the Western world taken together. You now have a conscript force, but those conscripts, to the extent that there is still conscription, and that's being phased out, has been for a while, is now essentially a second echelon group. NATO commanders like Sir Nicholas Carter, which is the British chief of staff a few years ago, are very worried about the very same thing that the Polish general was talking about, especially in the Baltics. The Rand Institute says that Russia can outnumber NATO, and will and does outnumber NATO there, 6-1 in tanks, 5-1 in armored fighting vehicles of all types, and really rocket artillery, 270 to nothing. which is a weird, ratio, meaning that the Russians completely outclass them in every respect. They do have superiority in combat aviation, but its effectiveness is going to be limited by what is really the world's most powerful theater missile and air defense system. Ben Barry of the International Institute for Strategic Studies does make the point that I've already made, that internal supply lines will give the Russians a giant advantage even beyond that. But again, NATO has not kept its Cold War infrastructure. And it's this publication that stated that Western Europe doesn't have the infrastructure to support tanks, the railways that can you know, the use of removing materiel. That would be a giant additional investment that simply the West can't do. And no one's even been discussing this. NATO simply is not capable of anything beyond this. Not when you have a massive empire and a complete collapse of military morale and equipment. Now, another publication in the Russian language, both of these are in the Russian language, it's called, the Political Navigator, is what it means. U.S. superiority in missile technology has now recently been undermined. This is from 2019. And this is, and actually, it initially came from a Turkish publication, TRT World. The latest Russian weapons, as it turns out, not only move or faster and move at better speeds, but can also maneuver. They are invulnerable to air defense and missile defense systems. The point is that Russia and China have invested in hypersonic weapons, while the U.S. has invested in stealth weapons. Very few people realize that the stealth weapons did very little in the first and the second Iraq War, and the Russian defense system spotted them right away. I almost think that the stealth technology just sounded cooler, and it's easier to sell to congressmen and to the public. And that's really, you know, why they went there. But it's a failure in that regard. Moscow and Peking refused to go down the stealth area, and hypersonic was better. And it does put the West at a disadvantage. The latest Russian missiles, as I've already mentioned, can easily bypass the defensive outposts of the West. The tech advantage is long gone. We talked about this when it came to all the new algorithms that the Chinese tech companies were developing, which is what the whole TikTok thing was based on. And you have the Pentagon coming out and saying, you have the British Daily Express, that the hypersonic revolution in both Russian and Chinese military has destroyed what technological advantage the West ever had. And this is, you know, this is a very serious matter. So for Western militarists, this is a very serious matter. The U.S., the Western world, doesn't have the cash at hand to invest to upgrade these systems. It would be a shock if the West ever reinstituted conscription. I have the feeling they would for women, too, if they do it. But now that the left is in control and the military does their bidding, and the military is, in fact, a leftist institution now, at least in the U.S., it would not shock me if the draft was reinstated for both genders. That wouldn't shock me at all, and the press would cover for them. The press suddenly would start talking about national service and the gratitude you have to have toward your country. All of a sudden, they'll be pounding their chest. So this March 9th article in RT is quietly, I'm stressing quietly, causing a stir in the East as well as the West. Remember, Poland is technically a part of the Western alliance system. And in fact, Defense 24, we talked about the Polish general's comments in Defense 24, this caused a problem even within the Polish press. In fact, even when the publication Defense 24 itself, once this was published, some of their other editors and the Polish military itself. I don't know if this is an official publication or not. Really, and they got into a lot of trouble. They, in fact, NATO called RA Novosti and Sputnik and Izvestia as, you know, state-run propaganda outlets that allegedly are trying to portray NATO as an aggressor. I don't know if you've heard recently. Again, let's be clear. There is no Joe Biden. He has no opinions. He has nothing to say. He is a cipher. He is a media image. If it turns out he's been dead this whole time, it would not shock me. It's like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's all Weekend at Bernie's. I've been making those jokes for a while now. He's a front man, like Boris Yeltsin, who can be used, put in front of the cameras, while other, even more disgusting human beings actually make policy, and then you could blame Joe Biden for it. But really, you have educated people believing Joe Biden has policy. Joe Biden didn't utter a syllable about policy on his non-campaign. In fact, he didn't campaign at all. So it was someone within the Biden administration, this ridiculous defense secretary that he's appointed. All he talks about is you know, diversity and maternity flight suits. I still can't get over that. Now suddenly the claim is that Russians are involved in plan for world domination, global domination. I stated a few years ago in an article, I can't remember where, in my book on the American failure in the Islamic world, which I keep forgetting about, that the distinction between American action movies coming out of Hollywood and reporting on military policy, really that distinction doesn't exist anymore. Writing on military matters is identical to action movie. Because the censorship is so severe by law, you know, the embedded journalists, you have no idea what you're getting. They can make up whatever they want, and there's really no way, unless you're there, to be able to verify. So the distinction between an action movie and journalism on American foreign policy, military policy, is essentially now one and the same. There is no distinction. So using phrases like world domination, it's like Dr. Evil and Austin Powers. It's a Hollywood invention, a James Bond bad guy, complete creation. It's like the ISIS nonsense. Even the name was designed by, you know, to have a Hollywood impact. You know, the bad guy in the action movies. That's all this stuff is. And in fact, the bad guys in the show Archer called ISIS. So somehow the Western press, after this was released, said that now Russia, we know that Russians are involved in world domination, and they're actually accusing the right, because of this article from a Polish publication by a very westernized Polish general, very anti-Russian, very pro-Ukrainian, all that stuff, that somehow because of that, the Russians are planning world domination, occupying the Baltics, and then moving south after that. Using Kaliningrad as its jumping off point. The Russians have had nothing to say about this. The Russians are still consolidating their nation after what happened to them in the 1990s. The last thing they care about is trying to consolidate even more territory with the massive investment that that would require. But that kind of thought is beyond even your typical university professor, and they won't think this through. It's action movie bad guy stuff. And how this is being presented. I remember when the ISIS crap, I was the first one to write the article. Really, I just was making fun of it because it was so blatant. These guys wearing black ninja outfits in the desert. Always perfectly clean. Never any ammunition shortages. My God, you know, but the black is classic bad guy stuff. And that's what they're doing here. Now the world domination is what every bad guy, it's a bad cliche, coming from Hollywood is supposed to want. And last year, Russia's the deputy defense minister, Alex Fomin, said that, and we've talked about it on this show before, that NATO's increasing activity near Russia's borders is increasing the potential for an absolute, what he calls, catastrophic accident, he said. He stated, in 2020, the activity of air and naval forces from NATO increased significantly, and situations that can lead to serious incidents are increasingly emerging. And he says these actions were provocative. The incidents were avoided only thanks to the high-level professional training of Russian pilots and sailors. Now, if you've been listening to this show, you know exactly what we're talking about. So the Western world, whose military is creaking, that doesn't have the economy, doesn't have the equipment, doesn't even have the infrastructure in Europe to support any kind of a war, is doing all in its power to provoke Russia. And I'm saying this, that if it happens, it's the only thing to save the Western world from utter and complete bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, to be nice about it. The U.S. is heading for absolute catastrophe beyond anything that we can imagine at the moment. This is just a foretaste. A war with a major power, even a war they know they can't win, may be just enough to unify the country and to rebuild its dying economy. But of course, this isn't 1941. Whether it be racially, ideologically, simply there isn't the infrastructure intellectually, ideologically, or physically to maintain any kind of a war, any kind of a public-owned infrastructure, industrial foundation. Returning industry to the U.S., again, even there, doesn't have the infrastructure. The U.S. isn't prepared for this kind of thing at any level whatsoever. And yet, they're still starting wars. The point, of course, beyond that, is that Russia, just by itself, let alone with its Chinese ally and many others, is superior in almost every respect to the Western world, you know, financially, ideologically, in terms of its material, its weapons, its investment, its supply lines, its morale, its purpose. The U.S. is going to be one of the shortest empires on record. And boy, we could thank God for that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And all of us here at Radio Albion, hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.